Hi, I'm Anne.
And I'm Judy.
And this is Track Changes.
We are two editors.
And this podcast is your next best writing tool. On today's episode, Judy and I are interviewing Dori Harrell. Dori Harrell is the head editor at Redemption Press and also a very accomplished freelance editor. I felt very lucky to get to talk to Dori because a lot of what we talk about is actually not writing or editing. It's about the emotional side of doing work that is very isolated and sometimes very competitive. And what she said, especially at the end of the episode, has really changed the way that I work as an editor. So today you're going to get to hear us talk about imposter syndrome, working in isolation, the wonder of having two screens and little exercise wristbands to keep your wrist warm, and letting go of the idea of competition. You understand some of what we're talking about. We end up talking about... So before we move on, I want to make sure deadline edits and line edits and copy editing and proofreading. And in this podcast, we intended to get around to explaining what all of those things were through our interviews, and it just never happened. So I will give you a really quick rundown. So in editing, there are developmental editors. So that's where you work with an editor to get your story structure right, to make sure your characters are fully developed. It's big structure stuff. Then there's line edits where you work on style, flow. We're talking about where do chapters break and word choice, stuff like that. Then there's copy editing. These people are experts in punctuation and grammar and the finer points of linguistic polish. And then there's proofreading, and proofreaders check for errors. So when I say that it's amazing that Dori does everything through from developmental editing to proofreading, I hope you can understand how crazy that is. So, I hope you'll enjoy this interview as much as I did.
Okay. How are you all today?
It's a big day.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Am I your first interview, or did you already do interviews?
Well, we were going to do an interview, but she ended up having a family emergency. So you are a real total guinea pig.
I told you we would.
You might never do that again with me, but.
So Judy, you have the questions you wrote out for her.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, I will add in my own.
Well, when we started talking about what we were going to do here, one of the things that we talked about is that even as editors, sometimes we feel like we're not ready for the task that's before us. We feel inferior and not qualified to do it. And I've heard you talk about the imposter syndrome before. So I wonder if you want to just define that for us and kick us off that way.
Okay, so imposter syndrome is that sense that you are incapable of the task set before you, and that you're a fraud, and that you're going to be exposed for the fraud you really are at any moment. So that's what makes it different than, say, an insecurity or unsureness, is that sense of fraud that comes with it, and that sense of going to be exposed for that fraud that you really are. So people who suffer from imposter syndrome always have that in the back of their head, that they're just waiting to be exposed, and that it's just gonna happen. And all they have to do is open their mouth or turn in the project or whatever it is, then they're gonna be exposed and they're gonna be discovered for the fraud that they really are.
And I assume that this is not specific to writers or editors. I read about it a lot with Reddit writers, and both Anne and I have talked about that feeling when we approach a job of being not qualified, being exposed for the fraud that we are. Mm-hmm. in the research that you've done, where do we find imposter syndromes? Are there some professions that are more prone to it than others, or some personalities that are more prone to it than others?
Right. So that's a really good question. So obviously it can afflict anyone, mm-hmm. right? But the people reported who most report imposter syndrome are high achieving individuals, so highly successful people, and creative people. So imagine if you're high achieving and creative, right? So that sense can even be more pronounced. So success itself does not just overcome imposter syndrome. So that's one of the reasons that you hear about it in the writing and the editing communities. So often, because those two go hand in hand, the high achieving and the creative, and the people who don't think that editing is creative need to take a second look, because even copy editing, like what Judy does, mm-hmm. as compared to developmental editing, like what Anne does.
Yep.
Right. So even copy editing has a creative and an artistic side to it. So knowing where to place commas and how they work with the flow, mm-hmm. and the intent in a sentence can be as much art as it is science. So you can have imposter syndrome about something very specific to, like commas. Commas with non-restrictive and restrictive elements really threw me off. I consider restrictive versus non-restrictive the bane of every editor. I spent an entire month doing nothing but commas. I looked up everything. I practiced how to apply them in relationship to restrictive and non-restrictive commas. So I don't really suffer imposter syndrome about comma placement anymore. I'm very confident in my comma placement. Matter of fact, I'm afraid the proofreader is going to screw up the great comma placement. But just because you may mitigate it or defeat it in one area doesn't mean that imposter syndrome is just going to go away or that you're done with it.
Dory, do you have imposter syndrome? Are you speaking from personal experience, not just in one place in your life?
Right. So I suffer from imposter syndrome, and I've suffered from it since I first started writing professionally, but I didn't know what it was called. And then when I started editing, it manifested itself in all new ways. And I didn't know 4 years ago, I still didn't know what it was called. And I was working with a life coach, and I said, yeah, you know, I feel so much like a fraud. That's what I call it, my fraud alert. Mm-hmm. And that I'm going to be exposed every time I turn in a manuscript. And she told me, Dory, there's a name for that. And you know what else she told me? You're not the only one. Mm-hmm. I didn't know. I thought I was the only one. But it turns out,
I heard you speak a couple years ago at a conference. I thought, oh, I must be the only one who feels like this. So I think that's probably part of the syndrome as well. Mm-hmm. And especially if you're a high achiever, perfectionist, creative sort of people, you sort of tend to think you've made that on your own in a way, mm-hmm. and are reluctant to divulge those insecurities to anybody else. So.
Right. And I think that when you writers and editors and other freelancers in particular tend to work from home, mm-hmm. and aren't surrounded daily by a team like you are in an office or a facility where you have coworkers, mm-hmm. with you. So I think that aloneness can project that even more if you suffer from it. I know it did for me.
Yeah.
I know it did for me. Mm-hmm.
Part of why Judy and I ended up starting this podcast was just like, we don't talk to other editors. Like, it's just us and our clients.
I know.
I don't know if I'm doing it right. I don't know if other people are dealing with the same things. Like, I don't know. Do you build that way? I don't know. I build this way. It's not just the commas. It's the whole thing. You're making it all up on your own.
Yeah, it's right. A very isolating kind of situation.
Exactly.
And, expectation can also often breed that sort of insecurity.
It does. And that sense of fraud. There's no one telling you that you're not a fraud when you work in isolated, in isolation or at home or without a team around you. There's no one telling you good work or good job, right? Our clients often don't tell us that, in fact. And we hear a lot of how imperfect, editors hear a lot about how imperfect we are. Or not perfect, or a bad review that says, well, they should have had a better editor, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. And so we hear a lot of that side of it rather than the accomplishments.
Well, and good editing doesn't show up.
Exactly. And I just was reading on another network today about, you know, a lot of editors will include in a contract something about it. This may not be error proof because this is a human endeavor. And so there's, you know, there can be pushback from a client if you haven't, if you've missed something and it seems egregious to them. So that can be a real thing.
Dori, what kind of editing do you do?
I do all levels. So I'm one of those who I call myself an all around editor. So I can see the big picture.
Yes. And you do. Right.
So I do developmental editing, but I'm also super detail oriented. So I do proofreading too. So I do developmental editing, line editing, copy editing, and proofreading.
Okay. Interesting. I mean, I do up to copy right now. And then I hand it to someone else for the proofreading. I say, go to Judy. Judy is great at that.
Right. And I think knowing your skills like that helps mitigate a bit of that imposter syndrome because you're not dealing it in an area that you already feel super insecure in. You've known your limits and you pass it off. And so you can avoid having it about proofreading. So that's a really good,
that's a really good idea.
Yeah.
Not going to do it.
Yeah, are there other mitigation strategies that you recommend?
There are. I have six or seven things that I recommend if you have imposter syndrome. So if you're a Christian or if you have a higher power, I recommend starting at the top. Let God affirm who you are and what you're doing in your career. Let him affirm you before someone else. And I have had people come to me wanting to be editors who simply do not have the right skill set to do it. I'm not saying that he automatically will affirm you if you are doing something that's not what he designed you to do. That affirmation may not be there. And if it's not there from him, then I just recommend stepping away and finding out what's there from him. And I recommend doing something. So if imposter syndrome strikes, strike back. You can be filled and your mind will be filled with those negative thoughts, with that devil on this shoulder. So put an angel on the other shoulder and do something. So one of the things I recommend is solve a problem. Or find something that will make yourself more efficient at what you're doing. And I have solved all kinds of things because when that feeling would come on, I'm like, I need to do something. I need to do something. I need to find something to do. Simple things for me, for example, is like I hate toggling at the bottom of my screen. So here's Word, and then I'm going to go online, and I have to click on the little Firefox Word symbol, world symbol. And then I've got the style sheet open and I'm working on the review letter and I need to see the manuscript. So I don't like toggling. And so one day I said, so what can I do so I don't have to toggle anymore? After I turned in a manuscript, I was overcome with imposter syndrome. And I went to my husband and said, you know what I need? I need two monitors. You know what I really need? I need three monitors. And he's my tech guy. He's really tech savvy. And the next thing I know, I have three monitors in front of me and my mouse moves seamlessly between all three monitors. And I hardly have to toggle anymore.
The editor's dream setup.
Yes. And I loved it. And it wasn't that expensive. And all the monitors we bought somewhere, I think for $35 a piece, they were on sale at some going out of business place. It wasn't expensive. We had to buy the software to be able to enable the mouse. But it solved a major problem for me during an imposter syndrome phase. And then another thing that I've done is I've made myself more efficient by doing that too. And if you've ever seen me or been at a conference with me or even on Zoom with me, I wear a wristband on my right wrist, which is my dominant hand, because I have a medical disorder, which means that I have to keep my legs up when I write or edit. I have blood clotting disorders. And so I have a smart top desk, which means it's higher than where your normal keyboard would go. Mm-hmm. And for years, I struggled with having my wrist on the desk, and I tried all kinds of things. The pads, the pulling my sleeve down, simple stuff, bigger stuff, nothing worked. Nothing worked. My wrist would kill me. I was getting therapy, massage therapy for it every week. And one day, after, again, an imposter syndrome turning in a file, I finally need to solve this. And I thought, you know, I just need one of those wristbands like we wore in the 1980s. Right. And Big Five happens to have a nice selection of them. And I have not had any trouble with my wrist since that day, since I started. I wear them 24 hours now. I take them off to take a shower, get in the swimming pool. But my wrist is always warm. That muscle is always warm. So do something. So my big advice is when you are really afflicted with imposter syndrome, do something. And then my other big piece of advice, and if anybody gets only one thing out of all this today, it would be find a mentor for what you're doing. Like you and Judy have kind of found each other in starting this podcast. Find a mentor or someone to work with so that you're not alone or in isolation. Someone who can affirm you when it strikes, and someone you can affirm when it strikes them. But finding a mentor or a editing or writing companion can really help mitigate the continuousness mm-hmm. of that feeling.
I think that was one of the biggest things that came out of the conference I attended earlier this summer where mm-hmm. I met Anne.
Yeah.
Is I also have hooked up with a writing accountability partner from there. The first conference I've been to where there were so many local people.
Yeah.
And that often doesn't happen at a conference. I mean, you can keep in touch electronically with people you meet from a distance, but boy, there's just not the same thing as if you can get together for a cup of coffee or just actually spend time in a shared space, which isn't so easy to do right now with COVID, but yeah. Made it happen.
Yep.
A couple of weeks ago, I'm meeting somebody for coffee every other week. I can attest to that as just a very important piece for not only this, but just mental health in general.
I agree. And that makes me really happy that you found someone, that there's at least someone else with you in what you're doing. So we have some writers in my area, but we don't really have other editors. Mm-hmm. And I work for Redemption Press. I'm the managing editor of Redemption Press. That helps because I'm surrounded by a team in a chat room. It's not the same, but I do at least have that team atmosphere in my career life. And that helps me a lot.
Somebody might see your edit before it goes somewhere else. Someone to ask a question to.
Exactly. And I do that for the editors a lot. We have a Facebook page. They'll sometimes ask questions and I let them interact with each other, but then sometimes I'll jump in too. And so just trying to create and keep a team together, at least online, is better than not at all.
Yeah. I do feel like with freelance editors, it's harder to find other editors because there are less of us than writers. Like that's just, it's, you have to be able to write and edit. And those are two really different ways of looking at things. Being in the writing process is like you're in the trees, and being an editor is like you have the map and you're making the map and then you're changing the map to make it better. So there's just so many less of us, but then it's kind of competitive. We're all trying to find clients. It can feel like teaming up with an editor is going to take away your clients, which is
right. And it can be, and it can feel like that in the freelancer world. So I would say let that go.
Mm-hmm.
I would say it might be kind of hard, but let that one go and really work on finding that person who can be a mentor or a companion, a friend, career friend that may turn into, you know, all kinds of a deeper relationship. Mm-hmm. Because as competitive as it might be, the Lord has a way of working these things out
mm-hmm.
to His glory, and you will find that you have different, like you and Judy are perfect. Anne and Judy are
perfect.
We are a proofreader. That's a really great combination. Yeah. But even if it wasn't like that, I'd still think you two would make a great mm-hmm. pair. Someone who's matched your personality, someone who can listen. What we do is hard.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the complaints that we hear are hard.
Mm-hmm.
And the due dates that we have and the things that we have to meet are hard.
Mm-hmm.
And what you do is hard. So it's just nice to have someone who you can talk to and bounce stuff off with. And that will, I really think that will help when you're dealing with imposter syndrome
too. So I have a question for you as a writer or as an editor, which is that I know a lot of my writers are suffering from imposter syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
As a developmental editor, you know, I do a lot of the hand holding and the, no, you really are a good writer. Like just because I told you have to change 7 things doesn't mean you're a bad writer. As a writer or as an editor who also suffers from imposter syndrome, can you think of some ways that an editor could help out a writer in the way they give their comments and offer affirmations?
Right. So I think you just said the 2 keywords. So I comment very specifically and in my review letters and I have, I think, didn't you receive one, Judy? One of my review letters? Right. And so in my review letters, I have a very specific way of commenting with the authors when I'm doing developmental edits,
mm-hmm.
which is where you do a lot of commenting.
Yeah.
Not that you don't do, you can do a lot in copy editing, but it's really related to a change you're making or why you put a comma here and things like that. So with developmental editing, you're doing more commenting. So here's some of the things that I do to mitigate imposter syndrome in the writers, whatever skill level that one, mm-hmm. I never use you, the word you, in a comment. The only time I use the word you in a comment is if I'm saying something positive to them. Wow, this was brilliant. You did a really great job with this simile. So if it's something positive, I may use the word you in a comment. Otherwise, I never use you in a comment. I always phrase it so it's neutral. And that takes more work and more time. Sometimes I have to literally stop and think how to phrase it. It's hard. You can't just start typing away because I actually have to think of how it can be phrased neutrally.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes more time.
Mm-hmm.
But if you will invest that time in them, you will reap the rewards of that investment in return clients. So when I'm bidding on developmental editing jobs, I always give a sample of my commenting because it can be hard to do a sample for a developmental edit.
Yeah.
Right? Lots of people don't even do samples for developmental edits. So one of the things that I do is let them know that, hey, you can't really developmental edit 2 pages, but I want you to see a sample of my commenting.
Mm.
And so what that does is that affirms their writing or potential. Okay, so, and they can see that how my comments are neutral and not judgmental.
Yeah.
Right. And so I will almost always get, if I'm within a price range, within a budget, I will almost always get the developmental editing job, almost always. And part of that is my commenting structure. So that is one of the ways that you can mitigate imposter syndrome in your clients is by neutral commenting and then reserving the personal for positive comments.
That's really fantastic. You're going to have more competition. Other editors are going to listen to this and go, oh, that's how I can do it. Thank you, Dory.
Right. And Judy works with me with Redemption Press. So she's aware of this because I have all the editors do this with Redemption Press. No, I didn't start out doing this, but I when I would see some comments come back from the editors, I struggled with them myself. Mm-hmm. And that's when I thought, you know, we need to be doing this company-wide. We need to do this company-wide. And the editors have been really great about responding to it. And I know it's probably meant a little more work for them, but that will help reduce imposter syndrome in your clients, with your clients.
Yeah, and that fits with kind of my approach to editing too, is that, you know, I try to think of this as a team. I'm on your team. Mm-hmm. And so to set up an adversarial relationship in your editing process is really not where you want to be. You're either a cheerleader. Mm-hmm. So
you're their champion.
You need to find a way to encourage them and put things in as positive a light as you can for them.
Absolutely.
And one of the things that I recommend too is letting them know if you have bid on and accepted their job, you think that they have potential. I pass on every job or writing that I feel like does not have enough potential.
Yeah.
So if I have taken the time to bid and want to work on their project, that means that there is something special about it that attracted me to it. So whether it was their voice, whether I saw potential in the story, whatever it was, and that will help give them affirmation of the direction they're headed to. So I do let authors know that I'm bidding on this because I find some value in it. I turn down most requests for editing. So if I have gone through the trouble of offering a quote on a job and responding to that author, then that means that I find something worthy in what they're doing.
And there ends our episode with Dory. We got pretty giggly near the end, and I just kind of had to cut it off because we kept talking over each other. So I want to end this with recapping what Dory says about how to deal with imposter syndrome. So number one, she said to rest in God's affirmation. Number two, she said do something. And number three, said find a mentor or someone to work with. And I want to thank you, Judy, for being my somebody to work with, or one of my somebodies to work with. Next week, we'll be talking to Mary Potter Kenyon, whose book, Called to Be Creative, is helping people explore new ways to be creative, especially right now, during a time when people have been stuck inside, bored out of their minds. So we'll talk to her next week.
Thanks for listening.
And don't forget to turn on Track Changes.